Welcome back to McClanahan Academy's United States History 2, 1865. We're at presentation 2, pre-Columbian America. So we're going to focus on, as it says, the period in America before Christopher Columbus arrived in 1492. Now we're going to do a whole presentation on the American Indian tribes after Europeans arrived. But I want to talk about some of those tribes before Columbus arrived. And then, of course, we're also going to look at Viking exploration. There's some interesting history involved in that. So we're talking about American history long before there were Europeans here, at least in theory. Now, I'm going to get into one interesting theory about that that's not very popular, but the man who has this theory, he's not a crank. He's not some kook out there running around the internet with some type of conspiracy theory. I would say that there is a conspiracy theory by someone who's well regarded by the lefties to have a major conspiracy theory that is a kooky theory. Generally, the people on the left tend to be the kooky ones. But this pre-Columbian America is very interesting. Again, it gets back into that last presentation. We talked about what is history and how do we determine what history is. In this case, there aren't any written records. We do have some when you look at some of the South American tribes. But there's not really much there, so we're going by artifacts. We're going by guess. We're having to use our imagination to try to determine what happened in America before Europeans got here in the 15th century A.D., So if we're looking at that, well, then that becomes a great big field and very complex. So let's talk about this pre-Columbian society. First things first, a timeline, a chronology. I'm going to use these in all of the presentations where we're talking about events. So this is a great way. Again, you have to have an anchor. You have to have some way to figure out when we're talking about here. And in human society, we do that by dating things. So you have to date things. And that's an important part of understanding history. So we know between 33,000 and 8,000 BC, the first human migrations into the Americas begin. We don't necessarily know how that happened. There's a lot of theories about that, but we're going to talk about some of those theories. So, and as you can see, I'm using the traditional BC and AD. I don't use the BCE or CE, which is what the modern historical profession uses because it's taking religion out of everything. So I use BC and AD. Between 5,000 and 1,000 BC, we have agriculture established in the Americas. Between 1,000 BC and 1,500 AD, we see these various peoples begin using metal. They have advanced irrigation systems, large settlements in South, Central, and North America. So over that 2,000-year period, we start to see the establishment of civilizations. Between 500 and 1,550 AD, we see advanced civilizations in the Americas, including the Moche, the Nazca, the Mayan, the Toltec, the Aztec, the Inca, the Olmec, and the Mississippian peoples. And then around 1000 AD, the Norwegian Viking explorers discover North America and establish a short-lived colony in modern Newfoundland. Now, though it might have been the first Europeans here in North America, if you don't believe the Solutrean thesis. So I'm going to get into that a little bit. This is fun stuff. It's not, if you take a U.S. history course, you don't often do these things. Sometimes you do. I know U.S. history courses and other places I've taught online, we didn't start with this. We started essentially with the British getting to North America. I wanted to get into more of this kind of stuff in this particular course because there's some really interesting things going on here that we need to talk about. So first question, the first peoples. Who are the first peoples in the Americas and how did they get here? This is a huge question, in fact. Where do these people come from? How do they get here? And it's a politically loaded question. You wouldn't think this would be a politically loaded question, but of course everything in 2019 is a politically loaded question. Unfortunately, because it shouldn't be. We should just be looking at history for what it is. But if we take history as a weapon and we start saying, well, we have rights and wrongs, we have first peoples and Europeans who did wrong things, well, then we start getting the question, this becomes a politically loaded question. It shouldn't be, but it is. Now, the dominant theory is something known as the Clovis First Theory. The Clovis First Theory. The Clovis peoples are named for their first discovery in New Mexico in the 1930s. This is by chance. There was a dry riverbed. There were some bones found, and in those bones you found remains of humans. And it was actually discovered by a former slave. I believe his name was McJunkin, in fact. But he found these bones in this dry riverbed. And so in the 1930s, and this is Clovis, New Mexico, so these became known as the Clovis people. So they're also called the Paleo Indians or Old Indians, paleo meaning old. Now, how do these people get here and when did they get here is the big question. So in that 33,000 to 8,000 BC time frame, it's a lot of leeway and no one really knows because, again, nobody's writing this down. And how did they get into New Mexico is the big question. So one of the theories is that they crossed Beringia, which is the land bridge between now modern Alaska and Asia. And they moved south between two large ice sheets in modern Canada, the Cordellan Ice Sheet. So that's one theory. The problem with that particular theory is there's not a whole lot of evidence of humans in that area in the time period that you would think they would be there if this is how they're getting here. The other theory is that they took boats to skirt the coast where they use now underwater caves as settlement areas. So these caves, the coast we had a cooler climate then. And so we had it was an ice age, so the coasts were further out. And so underwater archaeologists have actually gone down in these caves and they found some evidence that people might have been there. They've also looked at the caves that are along the coast and they found some evidence that humans could have used these things as staging points to move south. Okay. So this is perhaps the more tangible theory, the boat theory. Keep that in mind, that boats are going to be the more tangible, the more realistic theory when it comes to how people got into the North Americas from Asia. Okay, because essentially the theory is all these people came into Asia, from Asia. So the Asiatic origins. Now, this also brings up a discovery of some remains in Oregon called Kennewick Man. Kennewick Man was found in a boggy area, fairly well preserved. And so there's been a lot of discussion and debate about Kennewick Man. Who is Kennewick Man and what are his DNA tracers? Where do they go? Kennewick Man looked a lot more European than Asian. And so there was this great debate about was Kennewick Man actually European? Were Europeans here first? If they're here first, that changes the entire structure of the argument that Europeans destroyed the Americas, right? It becomes a politically loaded question. Because then you're not talking about Asians being here, you're talking about Europeans. I'm going to get into this again. There's a theory that deals with this. So Kennewick Man, when they actually did some of the analysis and things, it found that he was probably Asian. But was he Western Asian or Eastern Asian? I mean, these are big questions. And the date that Kennewick Man was there, it kind of puts him in this Clovis or pre-Clovis, in fact, situation. So Kennewick Man was this political hot potato because if he was European, well, that would mean that Europeans were here first. And if he was Asian, that, you know, so it created this entire debate in the archaeological and historical profession about how we should handle Kennewick Man. Again, everything is political. It shouldn't be. If he is, whatever he is, that means whatever it means for the history of man. But it doesn't mean anything for now, right? But this is what we get into as people start to look at these things from everything from a presentist historical perspective and everything with political connotations with it. Now, what about the pre-Clovis peoples, you see? So you get these people that cling on to this Clovis first theory. These are the first peoples. They have to be the first peoples. And archaeologists and historians will hang their hat on a theory and they will die defending it. They would rather die defending it than admit they're wrong. Because that undermines their entire career. Okay? So the pre-Clovis peoples, if there are such a thing, archaeological digs in South America and on the East Coast of the United States provide evidence that there were earlier settlements than those on the West Coast or in the Western United States. Now think about how revolutionary this can be. If we're finding evidence that people were there in South America first. Well, what does that say about the Beringia theory, or even the boat theory coming down the West Coast? What does that say about that? Did that even take place? Were these people somehow, were they created here? Did they arrive from somewhere else, or were they created here? And that's one theory. And if they're on the East Coast first, did actually people arrive from the East Coast and then move west? That would blow apart the entire Asiatic origins. Europeans are not here first. Europeans are bad. Europeans destroyed everything. You see, again, political connotations to this. So a man named Dennis Stanford at the Smithsonian. So he's not some, this is an establishment guy. He's at the Smithsonian Institute. He has something known as the Solutrean Hypothesis. Stanford has argued that peoples from Europe and Western Asia, not East Asia, arrived first and then were wiped out by a mass extinction event. So in his idea, the Solutrean idea, and there's a reason he believes this, okay? If you look at the technology that's used, it's more European and West Asian rather than East Asian. And he talks about how they arrived at this belief. And I'm going to show you some of these things in an image. And then so these people might have been here first or maybe concurrently, and then there was a mass extinction event around 10,000 BC that wiped out all of these people. And there's been some very interesting environmental evidence of that. On the east coast of the United States, as geologists have looked at the land structure, you can see, of course, these sedimentary areas. It looks like there's a level that there was something that happened there. There's just something gone. And the theory is, of course, a meteor hit, maybe one of the meteors that hit in the area around Mexico, and it just wiped out everything on the east coast. Everything was gone. But the west coast tribe survived, or they came in later, after all this was wiped out. So we have this very fluid but contentious interpretation of early America. Again, the political connotations are vast. It's fluid because there's people talking about these things all the time, and we have to understand that we don't know everything. These are all theories when it comes down to this kind of stuff, because we're using the evidence that we have. You have to have an imagination. You have to imagine this is certain ways. Stanford said, well, look, if people could have taken boats down the West Coast, why couldn't they have taken a boat from Europe and stopped along some of the ice sheets and stayed there and then made it to the Americas, not really realizing they've gotten to somewhere else? Why couldn't they have done that? It's possible if the ice pack was thick enough and far enough south, they could have done that. Certainly they could have done that. We know they could have done that. So this is where Stanford, has a case. Now, we know that these people were hunters and gatherers. This is how they survived. This is the people that believe in the paleo diet. This is what they're talking about. We know that they were Stone Age people. They used stone tools and weapons. They didn't have any large settlements, not really much art or any other non-tool-related evidence of their existence. But we do have the tools and the weapons they used. And these Clovis peoples, or pre-Clovis peoples, used bifacial fluted weapons and tools with distinctive flaking. This is flint knapping is what it's called. You have to make the arrowhead. When I say they're bifacial, it's both sides. You don't have a flat side and then another. It's both sides are knapped, and they have a fluted tip. Okay, that only is found in Europe. There's no evidence that people knew how to do that in East Asia. When the Soviet Union opened its archives, and historians, when archaeologists said, okay, here we're going to find evidence, finally, because we're getting into Siberia. We're going to find evidence of the Clovis peoples here in Siberia. We're going to find all this stuff. They didn't find any of it. Nothing. And so Stanford is saying, oh, wait a second here. We're finding all this stuff in East Asia, I'm sorry, in West Asia, we're finding all this stuff in West Asia. We're finding it in France, but we're not finding it in East Asia. So, scratching his head for a second, maybe these things actually came out of Europe and arrived in the Americas. So he's using the evidence at hand and saying, here's the evidence. I mean, you tell me where I'm wrong. Tell me, he just followed the trail. Tell me where I'm wrong. I don't understand how you can say that this came out of East Asia. Now, the atlatl, which is another tool that was used by these tribes to give them a more force when throwing spears, adds force and speed to the projectile, was found in Europe first as well. And we know that these tribes are using atlatls. We found evidence of it. Okay, so this is a European weapon, European technology, somehow getting in the Americas. Well, how's that going to happen? There's no evidence of it in East Asia. All the evidence is West Asia and Europe. Well, we know these things were here, so how did they get here? I mean, it could have been that these Europeans, West Asians are here first. They're wiped out, but the technology is still there, and so they've transferred it to some of the people coming from the West Coast. So, I mean, this exchange could have taken place. We just don't know. Again, nobody wrote this stuff down. We got here from here. And we have a luxury now in modern historians where people write everything down, they document everything. We don't have that. We do know a couple of other things as well, that war before civilization in this particular time period, this was a very violent, brutal society. The struggle for life was real. These people fought each other all the time. They fought the elements. They fought the environment. They fought the animals. They were not very kind to each other. They did not sit around the campfire holding hands singing kumbaya. These early humans were extremely violent. And a man named Lawrence Keeley wrote a book about this, War Before Civilization. And his theory is that, look, when you look at the philosophical schools, one is that man is naturally good, one is that man is naturally evil. That's Hobbes. Rousseau is man is naturally good. Hobbes was actually more onto something, that if man doesn't have civilization, he is violent, he is brutal, and we need civilization to keep people in line. Now, Hobbes, of course, was the boot. You need the government to do it. If you don't have government, then you're going to have chaos. Either way, we know that government can also be nasty and brutal. But civilization is something that government's not necessarily civilization. Civilization can be there without government. We know that civilization has made people different. People are less inclined to violence and more inclined to work things out in other ways than with just killing each other. But we know in this period of time, we did not have peaceful communist Indians. They didn't exist. So when everyone talks about, if we could just live like the Indians, you mean killing each other all the time? You mean slaughtering people? You mean living a very brutal, primitive existence? Yeah, okay, let's live like that. Let's live without civilization, because essentially that's what they're advocating. And even the civilizations were brutal and nasty. So who wants to live like that? Certainly European civilization has advantages over all of these things. Europeans can be nasty too. Europeans can be very violent and brutal. But the beautiful part of European civilization, which the byproduct of that is the rule of law, the art, the legal system, the philosophy, these things that come out of Western civilization have given the world the most stable society in its history, the most peaceful society in its history. So this is what we need to remember as we talk about these primitive societies. They are not peaceful. So here's what I mean by bifacial. Two sides. You got the fluted tips at the base there. That's the Clovis or pre-Clovis point that Stanford is talking about. This is what he's getting into. So it's a nice illustration just to give you an image of what that. And then here is an atlatl. So it's a device. You put a spear in it and you fling it, and of course it makes the projectile go faster and with more force. And you need that if you're taking down big game. So the atlatl was a way to do that. Now, between 5000 and 1000 BC, we see the American Indian tribes begin engaging in agriculture. And this generally coincided with the growth in agriculture in the Middle East, though a bit later. In the Middle East, it was 6000 to 5000 BC in Mesopotamia and Egypt. So they're a little behind here in the Americas, but it's about the same time. The growth in agriculture allowed for the establishment of stable and permanent American Indian empires in the Americas, generally in South and Central America between 1000 and 1 BC, and later in North America. These civilizations also began to engage in metallurgy and complex construction, including pyramids in South and Central America and temple mounds in North America. So you have all of these, I mean, pyramid construction. It's interesting. The Egyptians are building pyramids. Thousands of years later, you start seeing pyramid construction in the Americas. So at a certain stage, humans begin constructing pyramids. I mean, they get to a stage in a civilization, this is what they do. They construct pyramids or these type of monuments. We see it in Europe, Stonehenge and other things. So we see monuments being constructed at certain points. These major American Indian empires were comparable to Bronze Age cultures in the Old World in terms of technology, art, and construction. So if you look at the Bronze Age cultures, the Egyptians are the most famous Bronze Age culture, but you have others in Mesopotamia. Of course, there are some Bronze Age cultures in Greece. We see some of these Bronze Age cultures. It's exactly what these American Indian empires were. They were Bronze Age cultures. And the things that they were doing and the technology and artifacts that we have found from them. So in South America during this period, you had the Moche, the Nazca, and the Incan Empire. And there is and this is in Peru, what's in Peru, a violent consolidation of tribes leading to the Inca Empire in the 14th and 15th centuries AD. The Moche and the Nazca were essentially absorbed into the Incan Empire. We'll talk more about the Incan Empire when we look at the Spanish occupation of the Americas. But we know this was a very wealthy civilization. It had wide trade. They could get fresh fish from the coast into the interior within hours because of the runners that they had set up that would do these things. They had elaborate construction in the Andean Mountains and coastal deserts. The Huaca del Sol and Machu Picchu are just beautiful sites. Huaca del Sol is the largest pyramid in the Americas, and it was destroyed by the Spanish. They turned a river to it to try to erode it away so they could get the gold out of it. They got it out, but some of the pyramid is left. They engaged in terrace farming and irrigation and fishing, so they have technology that's, again, comparable to Bronze Age cultures in Mesopotamia in Europe. They mummified remains, just like they did in Egypt. They mummified everything, and these mummies are all over the place in South America and Peru. Their medicinal habits are quite interesting. They had these weird things that they would do where they would elongate skulls by putting boards onto people's heads and as their infants and crush their skull out so it makes it longer. I mean, they did these very strange things we would say that that's quite odd in modern society. But they also practiced human sacrifice. Just about every one of these tribes did practice human sacrifice. So again, are they that peaceful? And they would often conquer other tribes for sacrifice purposes. They had a polytheistic religion, just like all the other tribes did. We know a little bit about the Moche and Nazca because of what are called the Nazca Lines in the Peruvian desert. These are the pilots used to call them the alien landing strips. So there's a theory, of course, that aliens helped build these things. They constructed all this artwork that you can only see from the air. So how do they do it? That's a great question. Nobody really knows. And the Moche were very good at making pottery and those type of clay artifacts that depicted every aspect of their life. And so we have a glimpse into the Moche from their artwork. And they also made elaborate textile products that we have as well. So very interesting culture, very violent culture as their artwork depicts. And of course, we know with the mummification, how these people believed, at least somewhat, in an afterlife. In Central America, we have the Olmec, the Mayan, the Toltec, and the Aztec Empire. Like the Inca, the Aztec Empire was a violently forced consolidation of other Central American tribes into a wealthy empire by the 14th and 15th centuries AD. It was centered in modern Mexico, and both the Mayan and the Aztec empires featured elaborate construction, temples, pyramids, with the Aztec building a floating city, Tenochtitlan, in the capital of their empire. And It's amazing. I mean, the city floated. I mean, if you think about that, here's a people 500 years ago building a city that floated on barges, essentially. I mean, it's amazing. They were farmers and miners. They had a tremendous amount of gold and jewels. This is one thing the Spanish were infatuated with. I mean, they wanted this stuff that these people had, these wealthy, these beautiful jewels and gold. They wanted to get it back. We also know that these people practiced human sacrifice. We know they're at war constantly. We know there were slaveholding people. So were the Inca. We know they were polytheistic. And so they're a violent civilization. We know this from their pottery, from their textiles, from their frescoes, particularly when you look at the Mayan frescoes. As they started to come across these Mayan cities in the jungles of Mexico, they found these frescoes that depicted a very violent life. Human sacrifice, torture, all kinds of horrible things. So these people were not the best people when it came to, if we want to say a violent society is a bad society, no one would want to live in this Mayan society. Now, there is James Lowen, the sociologist who masquerades as a historian, who wrote a very popular book, Lies My Teacher Told Me, and he has an Olmec conspiracy theory that the Olmec are actually Africans and they're here first, because if you look at the skulls of the Olmec that have been found, or the art of the Olmec, they look like Africans. Now, this is 100% conspiracy. There was no evidence of this whatsoever. It's just James Lowen saying, well, I mean, we actually had Africans here first. No, there's no evidence of that in any way whatsoever. Not even a smidgen of evidence. It's just looking at a statue and saying, well, those people look African. That's it. But this is where we are, and James Lowen is a rock star in the leftist community because of this particular book, and it's garbage. If there's any book to avoid, it would be James Lowen's Lies My Teacher Told Me. Garbage. So this is one of the many problems of the book, but here's one when it gets into this early American Empire, early American Indian empires. Now, what about the Mississippian peoples? The pre-Columbian Indian settlements in the Mississippi River and Ohio River valleys eventually led to the tribes that comprised the core group of the northern Great Lakes Southeastern tribes. And this culture reached its zenith between the 12th and 17th centuries AD. They were mound builders. They built burial mounds, temple mounds, spiritual mounds. Probably the most famous is the Cahokia Mounds group in modern Missouri and Etzanoa in modern Arkansas, Etzanoa. There's Moundville in Alabama and Kalamoki in Georgia. These are very early mound building sites. So we have large settlements. Cahokia and Etzanoa. Etzanoa is an interesting one. I'll get into some of these things, the Etzanoa, when we talk about the Spanish. But we know from the archaeological digs that have taken place in these different areas that they were primarily agricultural people, also with hunters, but they had very violent tendencies. We know they used slash-and-burn farming techniques and clear-cutting. It's often thought these people were environmentalists. They lived with nature. They lived in the woods. No, they cut down the trees and burned everything out and then put fields in. I mean, they weren't living with nature. They're destroying it so they can live, right? I mean, nature is used. They practice human sacrifice. We know this because there's a mass grave of over 50 sacrificed women at Cahokia. They're beheaded. They practiced polytheism, and there was a serpent mound in Ohio, which is famous for this. We know we have pottery from these people found in these mounds. If you go to any of these mound sites, they're really interesting. And at the Kalamoki site in Georgia, they actually built their discovery center, their interpretive center. Half of it, there's a wall that's built within the mound, so they have this glass wall. You can see right into the mound. So you can see what's in it. And they did this back when you could do this kind of stuff, in the mid 20th century. They just cut right into it and put you can't do that now, but they did it so you can see into the mound. You can see what's in there. And they have the temple mound there. It's 60 feet. You climb up all these steps, you go to the top. It's pretty amazing. So you have these different areas that are great historic sites to visit. Particularly, I mean, I would, if you're ever in the Georgia, West Georgia area, that Kalamoki Mound is kind of near Lumpkin, Georgia. It's a really interesting place to go. I'd highly recommend it. Now, what about the Vikings? Did the Vikings explore and settle in North America? We know that Leif Erikson, son of Eric the Red, was in North America around 1000 AD. We know the Vikings were exploring. We know that we had had a warming period, and actually the Earth was warmer in 1000 AD than it is today. We had another ice age after this. So he was exploring, and he found North America. In fact, he found what's called Vinland, which we now call Newfoundland. Lance Almeadows, which is a probable ship repair station on the northern tip of Newfoundland, is maybe a Viking settlement. Perhaps there were other settlements around the Gulf of St. Lawrence, Stromfjord, and perhaps further south, maybe in Virginia, called Hop. So these Europeans probably came in contact with the American Indian tribes, but no mention is made in the Viking sagas. Eric the Red does mention a density of birds near Stromfjord. They were here. It's just, what did they do when they were here? That's the big question. There's not much evidence of Viking settlement, but perhaps there is some evidence, tangible evidence in Canada, for example, that the Vikings were here at one point. These are the first Europeans, if you don't believe in the in Stanford's view, the Solutrean thesis, these are the first Europeans in America, 500 years before Columbus is here. Now, what does this say? What is the summary here? Well, neither the Paleo-Indians nor their descendants in the Americas were peaceful communists with modern views of environmentalism. In any way, they weren't any of that. Violence dominated the earliest cultures in the Americas, be it warfare or human sacrifice. So this idea of the peaceful, communist savage is just false. I mean, there's a reason why. If you took my 10 myths of American history, there's a reason why the tribes were described the way they were by Europeans when they got here, because that's how they were, right? They were described as violent and savage. The Americas developed later than the old world societies in agriculture and construction, metalworking. None were an Iron Age culture or approached the technology of Europeans in the 16th century. So when the Europeans arrived in the 15th century and then into the 16th century, these people did not have anywhere close to the technology of Europeans. I mean, Europeans have gunpowder and firearms by that point, cannon. And the tribes are still running around with bow and arrow. So the technology was far superior. Europeans had constructed long ships that could, caravel that could travel the oceans. The American Indian tribes had none of that. We know Europeans were in North America at least in 1000 AD, but perhaps earlier if the Solutrean hypothesis is correct. So again, all subject to debate, but it's all politically loaded. So that's one thing we have to understand, and history should not be that way. It is, unfortunately. But if we just look at where the evidence takes us, I mean, it shouldn't be any skin off anyone's back to say these people are violent. Okay, so what? Right? They were violent. But everyone gets it, oh my gosh, you're calling my ancestors violent. Well, they were. I mean, this is what we get into. So it's not like we're saying it to disparage them. It's just their society. We can say, well, we don't really want to live like that. I mean, you can honor those people. You can be proud that those are your ancestors. You can be proud of the societies they built. They built beautiful architecture, great artwork. I mean, these are important things. You can be proud of those things. You also recognize that they were violent. So that's part of it. So I hope you enjoyed this particular presentation. I'll see you next time for Presentation 3.